You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 310. We've got a lot to talk about this week. A lot of news honestly, kind of a slow week news-wise. Really, not a lot happened this week. Not a lot at all. I don't know what to talk about, to tell you the truth.
Ska week!
Pick it up! Welcome back to the Ska News Podcast. We're just going to be talking about all things ska tonight. And if you don't like it, well, you can just two-tone out the door. You can just pick it up right out the door, because we're talking about ska all eras. No discrimination here. We don't care if it's two-tone. We don't care if it's second wave, third wave, fourth wave, fifth wave, or even the dreaded sixth wave ska. We're just going to be talking about all that upbeat type music. And I'm here with one of the... Actually, this guy was into ska music before most of you were even a twinkle in your daddy's eye. I'm here with managing editor, Two-Tone Adam White. Two-Tone, how are you feeling tonight? Are you excited for the ska episode?
You know, the incredibly pervasive Justin Bieber influence just ruined the sixth wave of ska. I don't know. I don't know what happened there. It was fucked up.
I mean, it was going good, and then, you know, they got the Bieber like singing like background, you know, like R&B style vocals, just did not work with the song. You know?
Thankfully, all those bands died in World War VI. So, yeah, I'm excited. This is fun. Ska are my roots, man. Ska is where I mean, there was this period of my life, and I've said this before, but there was this period where I'm like, I don't know if I'm a punk rock kid or if I'm a ska kid. Like, I could walk down either of these roads and they are of equal weight. So, you know, I've been down the punk rock road a lot, but I, you know, super soft spot. Is that a thing? That sounds like it's a medical condition. There's a spot in my heart that is not cancerous or...
It's just a spot in my heart.
It's just a good spot. It's a nice one. It's where ska lives. It's not going to kill me.
So as Two-Tone Adam White, you swing both ways. You swing Two-Tone and punk.
All the ways. Yep.
All the way. And we are also here with a guy that, you know, got into ska, probably at Hot Topic. I'm not exactly sure. We are here with Two-Tone,
fuck
Ricky
you.
Frankel. Two-Tone, what's happening?
Oh, God, that was shitty. No, not Hot Topic. I was good, John. No.
Please refer to me as Two-Tone John. Two-Tone, Ricky.
Two-Tone John. I'm sorry. I did not get into ska through Hot Topic. But yeah, no. This should be cool. I'm excited.
Well, like I said, we're just gonna take it easy. This podcast, we're gonna play a lot of tunes, and we're just gonna talk about ska. And when talking about ska, like Two-Tone Adam White said, you got to go back to your roots. Two-Tone Adam White, how did ye get into ska? How did you learn how to pick it up and wear the checkered socks?
You see, I'm not sure in my head what the first ska song that I had heard and registered as that, and it's funny because me getting into ska is really me getting into like independent music at all, and it was really through the effort of Stomp Records out in Montreal. And Stomp was, I don't know when Stomp would have started, but it would have been like the mid 90s. I bet you it was probably like 94, 95, around then. And Stomp was doing for Canada what Moonska was doing in New York. And it was really one of these labels that popped up out of out of complete necessity because there was no one else that was putting out that kind of music. Like the label was started by the Planet Smashers because they needed to put out their first record, and there was nowhere else that was going to put this out. So they got it together. I think it originally started, it was like a distribution deal through Cargo Records. And one of their first things that they had gone and had planned to put out was they were going to put out a split 7-inch between the Planet Smashers and another Montreal ska band called the Kingpins. And that didn't actually become a split 7-inch. They realized that there was a whole bunch of ska bands in Canada that no one was releasing anything by. So that became a compilation. And this compilation was called like the All Scanadian Club, which is a horrible name for anything, but we're talking about ska. So the All Scanadian Club, and I don't remember when the first one came out, but I will find out with the magic of Google. I am positive that people, what is it? 1996. I'm positive that there are people that, you know, brought that out to, I don't know if I was like in Boy Scouts or Ventures or one of those. I was a scout for a long time when I was a Ute. So, I'm positive someone brought out like the red and white checkered All Scanadian Club Volume 1, and we were super into that, and it was totally one of those gateway records where we got to start to listen to stuff by all sorts of Canadian independent music, Canadian bands, because coincidentally a little bit after that comp came out was when the rest of ska kind of started to blow up in the mainstream. So this was like 96. So no, it was probably about the same time, because like Rancid's Time Bomb was probably like the first one, right? So of that 1995-ish era that really started to do it. So all of a sudden, you know, Rancid was in play. The first Real Big Fish album got to be really big for everyone. Then we were just getting into all this other music. But at the same time, because this was not just a ska thing, but a Canadian ska thing, we started going and picking up copies of, you know, Exclaim magazine and whatever Canadian music press and publications that we could find out about, because they were talking about these bands. And it was a really short jump from finding the Canadian, you know, the Canadian music press talking about the Planet Smashers to the Canadian music press talking about Chicks Dig It and Propagandhi and all these like non-ska bands that were on the punk rock realm that was there. But like, I totally got into that from the ska vector. Like that was my original way into it. So so for me, I'm almost positive it would have been, if not the All Scanadian Club Volume 1, it was definitely one of those first Planet Smashers records that got me in there. And it got me into everything, I think. So important, super important. Not a weird tangent I went on.
I got into ska the way as into it as Adam has, but I see. But what's different from my story about getting into it is I actually remember the first song that I remember being like, oh, that's ska. That's really cool. And I have a feeling that this might actually be the way a lot of people my age found it. And
Hot Topic PA.
Gilmore Girls.
You're not okay. Neither are right. John's
Gilmore Girls.
Pretty far off.
Gilmore Girls had some fucking cool music on it. Don't knock Gilmore Girls. Okay.
Gilmore Girls had ska on it. I've never actually seen Gilmore Girls.
There was a scene. I walked into the room once, and my wife was watching Gilmore Girls, and one of the characters was skanking to Time Bomb.
That's cool. Aren't they like witches on that show or something?
No.
Okay, so
it's like a relationship drama. Anyways.
So okay, first of all, I'm just
gagging the time. I walk. Bad news. Jimmy just broke up with me. I can't talk to you. Black deploy the time. Go ahead, so, Ricky. Tell us about your emotional story.
It's not even emotional. I remember playing Tony X Pro Skater as like a 6-year-old and hearing like Superman by Goldfinger. And that was like the first song I remember, and I always liked ska punk, but I would dabble in it for, you know, every once in a while, but then late high school, college, I really got into it with Choking Victim, Leftover Crack, Early Morning Glory, all that stuff. And there's something else. I mean, I'm convinced, and I can't figure it out, but I'm convinced I heard the song Crack Rock City by Choking Victim when I was like just as young. And I cannot for the life of me remember where or who, where I heard it or who showed it to me. I think it might have been like an older cousin. But that song is when I first heard, when I heard it again a long time later, like I'm like, I have heard this before and I just don't know where. I still don't. But yeah, that's so yeah, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, definitely that soundtrack was definitely an influence for me.
Wow, you want to talk about Goldfinger for a second? Talk about a band that on their first couple records was, I don't know, like for me was like Goldfinger was like a Blink 182 for me. Where they were this band that everyone I knew loved and everyone loved those, especially Superman was their second album, I think.
It's on Hang-Ups.
It's on Hang-Ups, yeah. So it's their first one, the self-titled one, is the one that had like Here in Your Bedroom on it. Mm-hmm. And but more importantly, Mabel. I had friends in high school that would like, everyone knew the lyrics to Mabel front to back, and everyone could just like scream out the song. And then you look at that band and they all of a sudden like lost all their sense of humor and became like an angry vegan band and
I think there's one small chapter that you're missing with them. They also did that cover of 99 Red Balloons.
That was in between the early Goldfinger that everyone was into and the kind of skeezy middle-aged Goldfinger that no one wants to hang out with anymore. But
that makes sense though, because you know 99 Luft Balloons by Nana sounds like a charming innocuous song, but it's actually about nuclear warfare.
Yes.
You see, for me, given the way that so Ricky, when you first got into this, you probably this is interesting. So you've because of the age that you are and the time that you got into ska, you have skipped you've skipped the part that I consider my particular blind spot. So I'm curious to see how John got in, and then I'll mention the blind spot in a minute because we're gonna get mail about it if we don't.
Yeah, the way I got in the ska is I was actually living in Coventry, England in 1976, and I knew this guy named Jerry, and he's like, John, I'm trying to invent this new musical style. I play everything on the downstroke. You know, when it goes, I said, Jerry, you know, I've heard that before. Why don't you try playing everything on the upstroke? And he did, and it was this brand new sound. And I said, Mr. Dammers, you've got something there.
There are so many ways that story could have became a Back to the Future thing.
Where it's like, yeah, I know. I was waiting for that, too.
Like, hey, is this Mr. Dammers?
Listen to this.
Yeah.
No, okay. The way I got in this, guys, I was playing Grand Theft Auto 3 in my college apartment. And I used to play Grand Theft Auto 3 and turn the music off and listen to like my music. And so maybe I would leave the sound effects on, but turn the music off. And so I wanted to listen to like oldies, like music from the 50s, kind of like doo-wop and stuff. And while trying to find it, I came across My Boy Lollipop, which actually is a song from the 50s, but it was the ska version, a Jamaican ska version. And then that led me to the Trojan Ska box set, and I clicked on it because it sounded kind of old and dusty. And then when I heard it, I mean, it wasn't oldies music. Well, it kind of was oldies, but it wasn't, you know, American oldies, R&B. It completely blew my mind. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was like, oh my God, this music is so catchy. And then when you start listening to the Trojan Ska box, oh, I skipped an important part. I was listening to it on my computer when Napster, the brief time when Napster was a streaming service predating Spotify. Adam, maybe you'll remember, for about 12 months, Napster was basically what Spotify is now. Do you remember that?
Yeah, like after it was a cool file sharing service and before it was like a graveyard of broken dreams, it was like really briefly like an internet radio thing, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I remember when that happened. I never had one, though.
And so that's how I before then I had Operation Ivy, which I liked, but I never really made the ska connection. And I was a big Police fan, and I still like the Police. But I think I might have made the reggae connection, but I never made the ska connection with the Police. And so I was totally digging the Trojan Ska box set. But for some reason, I started to reggae, more reggae after that, and not ska. A little while later, I got the Give 'Em the Boot comp volume. I think it's volume 2. Which is the one with Infested on it? Is that volume 1 or volume 2?
I think it's 2.
Volume 2. Might be 2. God, I love those. Okay.
And I got that, and I heard Infested, and Infested just blew my friggin' mind. And I switched to the whole thing.
That's a good one, yeah.
I think that's the one that's got, like, the silencers on it, and that's the one – I think it is. And that's got the one with Buju Banton and what do you call it? Not the selector. Who's Buju – I guess it's Rancid and Buju Banton. And I think maybe, like, Mad Lions on that or something.
You might be thinking of Volume 3, but yeah.
Maybe. I got Volume 1, 2, and 3 in the span of, like, a month, you know?
Infested was on Given the Boot 1.
Oh, so it was Given the Boot 1 then, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it just blew my mind. And I never really got into Third Wave ska, to tell you the truth, but I really got into Choking Victim. And through Choking Victim, I went back and got – actually, I listened to Mephistopheles a little bit because Sturgeon mentioned Mephistopheles in an interview once. But that's how I started listening to the Specials and Madness and that kind of a thing. So I really jumped around the board. I went from Jamaican ska to Third Wave to Two Tone.
You see, this is interesting because now I can talk kind of about where my blind spot is. So I was unlike the two of you, I was really into Third Wave when Third Wave was happening. So I'm not trying to say that like it makes me OG anything, because everyone was wearing, everyone had like frosted tips and really fat pants, and it was just a bad fashion scene for everybody here. But back in that time, so like I was really into Real Big Fish, I was really into Less Than Jake, I was really into the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and to me, like those were the things I listened to, and those bands are what really started to inform me about what was going on in the rest of punk rock. Because like, when did I first hear the Descendants? At least that I can remember, I heard the Descendants because Vinny from Less Than Jake was talking about how much the Descendants were an influence on them. Like, when did I first start listening to Fear? It was because Less Than Jake were singing about fear. Those kind of bands came out of that. I started listening to the Clash because everyone, when I was really super into Rancid, that was the classic thing to say about Rancid at the time, was that, well, Rancid's just ripping off the Clash. And at that point, I'm like, well, fuck, I'm just going to go listen to the Clash then, because I love this Rancid thing. So I'm going to love, you know, the thing that they're ripping off. And that really got me into the Clash. And then, you know, also via that, like the Specials, because, you know, everything being connected there. So like those bands are really important for me, like informing me about what was going on in the rest of punk rock at the time. But the one thing that I consider my big blind spot in, and when I compare this to, say, a lot of the people that I've talked to about ska online, they were all into, is that I have no recollection in that era of whatever was going on in the Midwest. So anything that was, I can't remember the names right now, but bands like, and some, anything that was coming out of the Chicago scene at the time, like I have no idea about. So like, what was the ska punk band that the Lawrence Arms guys were in?
Slapstick,
like, didn't hear them at the time. Like, Blue Meanies, like, I heard them afterwards, but didn't hear them at the time. Catch 22, didn't really listen to them at the time. Or like,
Link,
what's the band?
Link 88?
No.
Link 80.
Yeah, right. Like, none of those things. And like, I've, a lot of those bands, I heard them way after the fact, to the point where I was already kind of burned out on ska, or I had enough of it, that I didn't need to hear any more Third Wave stuff. And I was going back and listening to older stuff at that point. And so any of the stuff from that scene, the scene that kind of became Streetlight Manifesto and everything else, just didn't do anything for me. It didn't do anything for me, but I didn't really encounter it. The stuff that I did encounter that wasn't like out of that Canadian scene would have been, I've got to imagine, would have just been like Asian Man stuff. And it's only because of Less Than Jake. We're on Asian Man for Pezcore. So like, we were all listening to Skank and Pickle because, you know, that we made that connection. We're like, oh, Pezcore is on Asian Man. Asian Man has lots of cool ska bands. That's how we got into Mike Park and Skank and Pickle and everything else. And like, we got into those bands via that route. But I think to a lot of people, and, you know, please write us, podcast@punknews.org, if this is your experience. A lot of people got into this via like the, I don't know, like what was going on with bands like, say, like Catch 22 and...
See, but isn't like Catch 22 a little bit after Less Than Jake and Bosstones?
Well, so like it might have been. So, and I think that like my weird route through this, like I ended up in New York is where kind of my ska story goes. Is because I got into it through all the Canadian stuff that was going on in Montreal. I got into the stuff that was the big mainstream pop punk stuff. So we were listening to Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish and Sublime and everything else that was popular at that time. But then because all of that was informing me to go listen to old punk rock and to go listen to two-tone ska, where I ended up was with the stuff that was going on out of I guess it's not just New York, but stuff like the Slackers and Hepcat. And that's where I ended up. And then at the point where I started to burn out on the teenage third wave stuff, I was getting heavily into the Slackers, heavily into Hepcat, heavily into the stuff that like King Django was doing and releasing on his.
He's got like a million projects.
He has a million projects, and a lot of those projects were playing stuff that was like in the two-tone style, but it was involving a lot of people from the third wave scene that I liked, and that to me was like the legitimizing factor in it. So if you listen to like the first Stubborn All-Stars record, I think it's the first one, that has Back with a New Batch, I think is the name of the record, and then Pick Yourself Up, the single is on there. In the song Pick Yourself Up, Dickie from the Boston's is on it, and Tim from Rancid is in that song, and the Stubborn All-Stars themselves were like a bunch of the Slackers were in the band. So that all sort of spoke to me as being like, no, this is the real shit that you want to pay attention to, because this is what the bands that you already listen to are into, and that's where they're going with this. So that was the road that I took, and it just took me completely out of like the punky fast third wave realm of it. And then then I guess I ended up where you were, where I was like buying Trojan box sets, because then at that point I'm like I don't want to hear another, you know, punk band with a bunch of upstrokes in the middle of it. Like I'm done with that. I want to hear punk bands be punk, and for the ska stuff I'm, you know, I just want to hear it be like, I don't know, like more chill, more of its own thing, and less of a weird meld between the two. So Adam,
do you in your brain, is Jamaican ska and I guess two tone or third wave, is that even the same genre, or are they two completely different things? For me, they're almost two completely different things. I understand that, you know, third wave and two tone is influenced by Jamaican ska, but when you really listen to it, it's so different, you know.
It is, but there's enough of a there's like a 20-year gap between those things. So like given the amount of time between, well, not maybe 20, but like given the amount of time between what, say, was going on in Jamaica in the 60s and then what started going on in England in the late 70s, like I don't have a problem seeing the lineage there, especially because you had bands like, say, the Clash covering stuff from Toots and the Maydals. Yeah, right. You had the Clash covering Toots and the Maydals, and then you know the Clash involving, you know, they did, but they, what was, what's your buddy there?
Oh, Mikey Dread. But he's not ska. He's reggae.
No, but you had people making that, you know, from that universe, you know, from that kind of like Jamaican music universe crossing over into 70s punk. So to me, like, you can draw the line between the two, and I'm okay seeing it. I mean, there's definitely, I think if the point you're trying to make is that like what happened in Two Tone was definitely, it wasn't a
improvement. It's something different.
Yeah, like it was an evolution. It was not just like, hey, we're gonna start playing it just like the other guys did, right? Like in the same way, like where if you went today and formed a Ramones core band, people are gonna look at that and say like, all right, like that's great, it sounds fun, but it's totally derivative, and that already happened. I don't think you can say that really about Two Tone, because Two Tone was informed enough by what was going on in like punk rock and new wave and just like English music in general that it's definitely its own creature.
I gotta say that when picking favorites, I gotta go with the Jamaican stuff. If I really gotta pick, I love the Jamaican stuff the best.
Oh, what I found is that the Jamaican stuff for me is, whenever I can get enough of it that sounds like it's from that era, I absolutely adore it. And then I have a hard time finding a collection of it that, I guess, that like is consistent enough that doesn't all of a sudden drift into another genre and I feel that I'm like listening to something from later in this band's career. Like you go up and you pick up like a best of, say, like a best of Toots and the Maydals or something, right? Where
every song is exactly the same.
There's like 10 different versions of What's My Number on there, and yeah, but where by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, okay, this band has They've gone through a huge evolution. They're a different band now. They're playing something more on the reggae spectrum, and that's cool. But, you know, I'm not getting as much of, like, what that scene sounded like back when they were writing Pressure Drop. And maybe that's why, like, the Trojan box sets are so useful.
But. Trojan Ska box set, Trojan Ska box set, part two, Trojan Rarity Ska box set, Trojan Rocksteady box set, Trojan Rude Boy box set, Trojan Duets box set. Check out the Trojan box sets, people. They are gems. Let's play some jams. We're each going to play a tune. Two-tone Ricky, what's your first tune that you're going to play?
All right, so, yeah, my first song, I'm actually, I didn't even realize this. I am stunned. This song is 20 years old now, but I don't think we can talk about, you know, later ska without at least mentioning the Suicide Machines. So I thought playing New Girl would be kind of obvious, so I chose the second song on Destruction by Definition, called SOS. So here is SOS by the Suicide Machines.
And we're going to follow that up with something else from, I think, a little bit before that. But man, fucking Suicide Machines are great. So I talked about the Planet Smashers as being one of those first bands that I was really getting into and that really, like, helped me get into this kind of music. So this is an early Planet Smashers track. This is Life of the Party, which is a fucking classic by the Smashers if you haven't heard it. And it's super fun, so you can skank around to it. John, after we hear SOS and Life of the Party, what are you going to do?
I think I'm going to play Bauhaus.
John.
Yes, Adam.
Bauhaus.
Yes. And I know you're saying at home, you're saying, but John, Bauhaus is a goth band. Bauhaus is a goth band, but they have an outtake that it was on. I think they put on a 12-inch single, and they also put it as a bonus track on one of their albums. It's called Harry. And it's just them messing around in the studio, but it's Bauhaus playing a unquestionably ska song. So my song is Harry by Bauhaus, and it's Bauhaus doing ska. I knew.
a tight skirt and a sweater. You looking so beautiful, you want last feel. You can see the songs that you can sing us feel. If you're so hot and winky, I'll sweat. Let's find you out and loosen up, and so it's set. Making coffee for the war machines. Stimulating, copulating for all his schemes. I have you, you have me. We go where we want to be. We have it, we have fun. We go places to have some. Well, first it was New York with the right wing lights, and babies get the real with the who was right. Following and swallowing some two-tone pills. The sun is looking crazy, but it's so well built. You're moving steady, soon you'll be that star. Don't wrap up my some type of matches by a car. They'll lie you up and strip you down, you'll see. But you're still a horny to my bitch you used to be. Aye. Your mothers and your fathers and your boyfriend too. They're hiding places, can or won't expect you to. Running seeking shadows hung upon that wall. Fix the cash, don't fix the sketch, and fix the install. Assuming lies and stunners going to your head. They visualize you rising, my poor blood is dead. Your mother, brother, father, sister too. Snatch your best, all the best, go on you.
And we are back, and we got a loose episode today. We'll just talk about this briefly. You know, ska bands are famous for their terrible ska names, just their terrible names. I love No Doubt, but that is a terrible name for a band. But there's bands like, you know, there's Method Scoffolies, there's the Ska Flaws. Ricky, do you like terrible ska name bands, or do you think that's annoying?
I think I might get in trouble for saying this. I feel like they were sort of what they're... They're sort ska. Those ska names are kind of like the memes before the internet was invented. Like they kind of give me that same like, oh, that's funny or whatever, like briefly kind of thing. So it's fine. I mean, unless you get like pummeled with them, then it gets like old. But it gets old like really fast.
What is interesting about it is, to me, it speaks to. And this is going to sound like a super academic read on this, so I'm sorry if this isn't fun. But it speaks to the genre being more about the genre and less about any particular artistic statements. And I feel it does bands a disservice from that way. So let's say you're Hepcat or the Slackers, right? If you're Hepcat or the Slackers, you're just a band. You have a name. You can go do whatever you want, say whatever you want in your name. But, you know, if you're, I don't know, what's one of these goofy-ass ska names? I only have Mephiscopheles in my head because you said it, but let's go with that. Let's say you're Mephiscopheles. Or, no, I remember there was a band at one point, and I don't remember them if they were, I don't remember anything by them, but I remember their name from early punk news days. There was a band called Scott-O-Matic Weapons, right? So, like, let's hear your band called Scott-O-Matic Weapons. All I know at that point is that you are going to play ska, and I'm pretty much nailed down what kind of ska and what it's going to sound like. And that to me limits you because I immediately take you less seriously. So I'm not giving you as much mental rope as I would just a band that had a name on being able to do something interesting. And I don't really, and I don't expect of you to do anything interesting. So I think you're just going to play basically dance music and have fun with it, which is totally fine because, you know, everybody needs dance music and you can just have a band that's fun. But like being Scott-O-Matic Weapons is in a way, you know, it's like going and forming a band and calling it like, I don't know, like the like the John Gentile folk experience or something, right? Where you're going to go play a bunch of folk songs, and that's what it's about. It's about you playing a bunch of folk songs. Or, you know, it's having a band where, like, any band that has a genre in the name, you know, it's there. You're there then to hear music from that genre interpreted for you. You're not there to hear someone do something. You're not there to hear someone make an artistic statement. In the same way that if you went and saw, like, the John Gentile Jazz Quartet, you're there to hear you guys play jazz. I'm not there to hear you, like, you know, challenge me. At least that's the impression I get off it. I mean, hey, look what I did. Boston's, boom. I mean, let's not talk about Boston's stupid name. But the, you know, it does the bands a little bit of disservice there. And it, you know, makes the whole genre into a joke that makes it harder to talk about. But hey, I'm not bitter or anything. John, where do you stand on this?
I hate puns in song titles. I hate puns in album titles. I don't like puns and band names. However, I do get a little bit of a delight. Like, if there's a ska band and they have the ska in their name, like, ska in their name, then I do find that amusing. But I'm not going to be – I can tell you right away, I'm not going to be a fan of that band unless they are amazing. And, I mean, Mephistopheles, they get a free pass because they're supposed to be a silly band, and they're actually not strictly a ska band, so that kind of makes it even funnier. But – Not a fan of ska puns and any names, unless they just want to be another run-of-the-mill ska band, which is fine. And sometimes, like if you're at a show and the promoter puts, like, 9 bands on, and you're like, oh, God, I can't take any more of this, and it's all boring indie rock or death metal, and then some ska band comes up and, like, we're, like, no roller skying or something, then at least it livens up the party, and you're not going to take it seriously, but it can be a refresher. But more importantly, punk and ska, ska and punk, punk and ska and punk. There's always been a relationship between the two. In my mind, ska is a subsection of punk, but just today I was listening to a ska song where the band was saying punk is something different than ska. It was by the Association. And of course, the Association, Adam White, Ricky Frankel, the Association was a ska band, I think 79, 80. Do you guys know who the Association would evolve into?
I'm not familiar at all. No.
Well, they had a song called Elvis Should Play Ska, which is about Elvis Costello. They would evolve into a little band called Tears for Fears.
Huh. Look at that.
And so everybody comes from ska. But the point is, in your mind, I guess, at Two-Tone Adam White, we'll start with you. Where is the intersection between ska and punk? Is it the same thing? Is one a subdivision of the other? Are they entirely different genres? And I'll just say, it always annoys me how people say, you know, we're a fan of punk and hardcore. To me, hardcore is a subsection of punk, you know, so.
I would agree with you completely there. When it comes to ska, it depends on the era. So for me, in the Two-Tone era, in my head, ska, Two-Tone ska, and the punk rock of the time were two things that were happening simultaneously, but were not necessarily the same thing, with the exception of, I guess, maybe the Clash and the Ruts. But, like, even that, you know, the Clash were dabbling in that style that was not kind of like that was not their home, right? When they were doing the ska stuff, to me, like, that was not the core of what the Clash was. So they were playing into the Two-Tone world, but they were not a Two-Tone band, I guess, in my head. Like, there was a separation there. For modern day ska punk, I think that in most cases I would lump them under the punk umbrella, if only that you could draw the line back to Operation Ivy on so many of them. So, like, you can draw a straight line from the Suicide Machines or Less Than Jake or the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, any of those bands, right back to what Operation Ivy was doing. If you want to get on anything that was, like, newer than that, like any of that early ska, bomb the music industry kind of stuff, again, you can draw it right back into that. So, to me, that all falls under the punk rock umbrella. The only exception, I guess, really, would be the stuff that Moon would have been releasing that kind of became the stuff that Stubborn Records was releasing, which is, you know, again, the things like the Stubborn All-Stars and the Slackers and Skinnerbox and Hepcat and like those kind of bands, the Toasters, maybe, like, that kind of stuff, you know, maybe that all kind of lives more clearly on the ska end of things. But those bands all ended up playing tours with punk bands, and they all ended up on punk labels, and you know, all that stuff ended up on Hellcat Records. So hell, it's tough because, you know, there was not that huge separation. I think what there is, and this is something we never talk about, and I'm going to try to play one of these later in the show, is there's a fairly sizable scene. I don't know if it's necessarily a city scene. It's more of just like a, say, an internet scene of bands that play either two-tone or earlier traditional kind of ska music, never touch the punk end of it, and don't participate in the punk scene. And they just kind of like exist on their own. I don't know what they do. They play like jazz festivals or something like that. But like there's artists out there that are just out there doing kind of ska for ska's sake, and like it would never occur to them to go, you know, get open for fucking Leftover Crack or something, right? Like they don't even go over there. And I don't know what the, I don't know why that is. I don't know.
Cause they're dicks.
If it's they're dicks or like, or you know, I could totally see that like you approach it from a, you know, let's say you came up in the jazz world and you know, you like jazz, you like reggae, you get into ska, you got a bunch of, you know, session players that you play with, and you're going to form some bands and play some ska music, but you're playing stuff that sounds like the Skatalites. You're not actually, you know, you're not doing something that's necessarily, you know, going to make reference back to Op Ivy, you know? And at that point, you know, you could be out there having a whole little career playing gigs and stuff like that, and you never intersect back with the punk rock world. Those bands exist, but for the life of me, I couldn't name you one of them, but they exist.
Back to the whole, you know, like subgenre thing. Do you think it's that, you know, hardcore, I think I agree, is also like a subdivision of punk rock, but is it that reggae, is it that ska is a subdivision of reggae? And then I think because the popular.
First of all, do you mean Jamaican ska or two-tone and third wave? And also, really, ska is not a segment of reggae. Reggae is a derivative of ska. It goes blue beat, okay, ska, so rocksteady, reggae, dancehall.
All right, I got that mixed up then. I'm sorry. But yeah,
I'm not correcting you. I'm just talking. I'm saying briefly. Maybe people don't know where ska comes from. Adam, what, do people know where ska comes from?
I think people know where ska comes from, but do. I think that the distinction that you just made is often overlooked by people, just in kind of like the orders, right? Like we have reggae because it got hot. So,
you read that in the Trojan Rocksteady box set. I read that same line. Yeah.
tell people that story because that's good.
This is Trojan's thesis on why ska developed into rocksteady and rocksteady developed into reggae. And there's no real clear line between what's rocksteady and reggae. There's sort of a clear line between what's ska and rocksteady. According to the Trojan Ska box set, and I believe it because it's a cool story and it sounds good to me, you know, ska is very quick music, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. This is in Jamaica. And ska was popular in Jamaica from about 1966 to 1969. Before that, there was Blue Beat and Mento and that kind of a thing. Blue Beat is proto-ska. Mento, you guys know what Mento is. Mento is like, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, that kind of thing. And so in the summer of 1969 in Jamaica, it was extraordinarily hot. So the idea is that bands started playing slower, and that's the creation of rocksteady. And rocksteady is basically halftime ska that borrows a lot of melody from American R&B, and a lot of the songs are just R&B covers. And then, so that's the story. It's because it was so hot in Jamaica, all the bands started playing slow, and that's where rocksteady comes from. And of course, the Wailers, Bob Marley and the Wailers, they were singing ska, and then rocksteady, and then rocksteady developed into reggae. And Adam White, do you know what is commonly cited as the very first reggae song from rocksteady to reggae?
No, what is it?
Honestly, I think this is somewhat of a falsity. I don't think you can say this is the first reggae song, but people say the first reggae song, critics, Lee Scratch Perry's People Funny Boy. That's commonly cited as the very first reggae song when rocksteady became reggae. I don't necessarily think I buy that, but I think it's cool and I like Lee Perry, so I'll buy it, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I think the big distinction, and I guess this is what we're dancing around, is that, you know, if you, well, ska was this ancestor of reggae, it, because it didn't come after, it doesn't have to live as a little sub branch of its like way more popular child, I guess. It mm-hmm. sort of like it went and drifted off and then hitched itself onto the punk rock universe, and that's seems like where it's lived since then. I mean, if those lines were drawn differently, if it was that reggae was this massive cultural force and then ska was an offshoot of it, then the answer would be way clearer. But yeah.
And also the two-tone movement, well, no, actually two-tone movement came into existence long after reggae existed, didn't it? I mean, reggae is like 72, 73, and two-tone is like 77. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because when you look at it that way, it doesn't seem like there's a, you know, it's that many years. I think like 5 or 6 years, but like insane jumps in like genre happened, you know, between the 50s and the 70s, or 50s and like, it's even like the, let's say the 80s, right? That, I don't know, it doesn't feel like that much happens these days.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, like, was there that much musical development between, like, I don't know, like 1998 and now? Like,
no,
I guess we had some fucking emo happen.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, look at it this way. Sex Pistols is 1976, you know, and then, well, actually, look at it this way. In 1970s, like Joan Baez, Led Zeppelin, 1976 is the Sex Pistols, and then by 1979, you have Black Flag. Look at the sheer difference between just the Sex Pistols and Black Flag, and that's only 3 years.
Let me just jump in real quick on that. I mean, it's also less than 10 years between Woodstock and CBGBs.
That's pretty crazy too.
Yeah.
So, John,
I mean, I think it's like what, like 6 years or something like that.
That is pretty crazy. John, let's talk about two-tone a little bit here, just because this is such like the touch point for I think a lot of people, and probably a lot of our listeners. So we had a whole bunch of bands from that era. You got Madness, you have the Specials, you have the Selector, you have the English Beat, you have the Clash playing some stuff in that realm. Where do you fall on that spectrum? Who's your team?
Well, Adam, you mentioned that the Clash sort of touched it on two-tone, but I would refer all the listeners to read the Clash box set, because there's a line in there where Joe Strummer gets very mad because he says, we did Pressure Drop before two-tone even existed, and then once it was released, people thought we were hitching on to two-tone when really it's vice versa, which I find very interesting. I couldn't make a statement one way or another. But the big four ska bands, Madness, Selector, Specials, English Beat, they're all sort of different bands in that Madness started out strictly as a ska band, but by their second album, they were not doing strictly ska, and by the third, they weren't even ska at all. They're, you know, Our House, that's not a ska song at all.
That's New Wave.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the Specials, their first two albums are strictly ska, and then the third one is sort of experimental. I would say it's more kind of reggae. It's as reggae as much as the Police are. And people are like, oh, man, how could they stop playing ska? But, I mean, can you imagine – I mean, the Specials were the Specials like 4 years before they put out their third album. Can you imagine playing ska every night, all night, for 4 years? I think after 4 years, you might want to play something different. You know what I mean?
It's that fact that makes, like, when I look at bands like Real Big Fish or something that have been just like playing like this sort of like same tempoed ska punk music for like 20 years at this point, it makes them seem insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like it's Rush or Frank Zappa where it's complex so you have to focus. It's not hard music to play, which is its charm, of course. You know, and that's where it gets its power from. But can you imagine playing a ska for 30 years? Then there's the English Beat, of course, and the English Beat, they kind of went more reggae with their second or third album, Special Beat Service, is that their third album, or I forget. And then there's, of course, the Selector, who kind of just strictly played ska and still played ska and only played ska. So if I got to pick, I think I'm going to pick Specials, because to me, the first Madness album, the first Specials album are both dynamite. English Beat are a little bit softer. First Selector's album is very good too, but the English Beat, they're the first two-tone band. They hit the hardest. They got the best songs. They cover some Jamaican stuff, but they don't feel strictly like covers. I got to go with the Specials.
Yeah, and I would too. And for me, like, the Specials are the only ones that, like, if I stop and think about, like, what are some songs from that era that were just like that were just transcendent. Now, the first Madness record is super fun, but no one's going to listen to One Step Beyond or Night Boat to Cairo or something and think that there's much being said there outside of the fact that it's just super fun to dance to, right? But you look at some of the stuff in the Specials catalog where you look at a song like Ghost Town, where Ghost Town is, it's fucking deep. I don't know if it's deep, but it's like Ghost Town is a song that matters. Like you listen to it and there is a weightiness to it. Like they're saying something, they're at the top of their game. They're not fucking around. That is the Specials at their most is culturally relevant. Like Ghost Town to me is just super cool, right? And a lot of the stuff that's on Specials or More Specials, you know, falls into that realm for me where you look at it and you say the band is saying something, like particularly off of the self-titled from 79, where I guess Message to You, Rudy, but Concrete Jungle, there's a lot of stuff on there that is
Too Young, which has garnered quite a bit of controversy. Free Nelson Mandela, that's pretty heavy duty. Was it Man from the CNA or whatever? That's heavy duty, Man from the CNA.
Yeah, and so this to me the Specials are the one that resonates the most. And even though they had all sorts of goofy stuff that they did as well, it always seemed like they were going to do some goofy stuff in between stuff that mattered, and I guess that's why that's why it seems to make more sense to me, because you would have a song like Stereotype or Enjoy Yourself or something, or even Hey Little Rich Girl, and all these songs felt like they mattered, and then you'd have them doing something dumb like Sock It to MJB, and that's okay. Right? That's fun. Yeah, that's a cover, yeah, by the way, but anyways,
I think we're gonna be 3-for-3 on the Specials. I'm not gonna repeat what you guys said, but also, you know, I just,
what if Ricky just did, like, what if Ricky just read word for word what Adam White just said?
Your transcription skills would be amazing.
Without them, they're just, in terms of this genre, they led the way so much for other bands that I do love. Madness is fun. I forgot about what was that street song you mentioned? I forgot what it was called.
Our House.
I'm sorry. Our House. Yeah, they get points off for me for that.
Well, I like that song, but it's not ska. Our House.
Yeah. And I think the Clash, made a lot of headway with ska. I think they just kind of wanted to do a little bit something different from what they were doing anyway. So I don't think they made a ton of progress. I think they had, obviously made a ton of progress other places, but not so much here, I think.
Now, there is a great resource that is out there that will give you the best of all of these worlds. And if you can go find a copy of the LP that is the soundtrack for the movie Dance Craze. Which was a live documentary. Well, it's live. It's a documentary. It was a documentary film in 1981 about the two-tone genre. The soundtrack has basically all of these bands doing the most killer stuff in their catalog live and really amped up and really sounded good. So I was going to give you just this is the Dance Craze track listing here. Concrete Jungle by the Specials. Mirror in the Bathroom by the Beat.
All live,
right? You got songs by Bad Manners on there, by Madness, by The Selector, by The Body Snatchers. What else is on here? One Step Beyond is on there. Rank and Full Stop by the Beat's on there. Man at CNA is on. Night Boat to Cairo, of course. Too Much Pressure by The Selector. Again, Nightclub by the Specials. So much of all of those bands' best songs ended up on the soundtrack to this film live. And I owned this is probably one of the first actual physical records that was not a CD or a tape or anything like that that I owned. It was the first vinyl record that I owned because I grabbed it at a flea market. And I didn't even know it was a movie soundtrack for like 10 years until after I got it. I just thought it was just like a...
Doesn't it say soundtrack right on it?
No, I don't think... I don't know. I was young and dumb, so I just know I owned it, and it had all these bands I liked, and it never occurred to me that it was that.
Imagine getting that at a flea market, man. That's a cool find.
It was a cool find. Well, it was a cool find back when no one gave a shit about vinyl, too, It was probably easier to find than it was now. It was like... I remember like in the 90s, I grabbed like a handful of records at flea markets and just like hung on to them for years. And then afterwards, I'm like, holy shit, this is actually kind of cool.
So and then you start thinking about like, what did I pass up? You know, while I was there.
I know.
Listen, there's one thing that always bugs me about the Specials. And we mentioned it earlier. Racist Friend by the Specials. Fantastic song off the third Specials album. I got to say, and actually, one thing that always seems so prevalent with ska music, especially two-tone, is the concept of racism. I mean, I wonder if it's overstated. Like, they're always talking about racism and how they're fighting against racism. Did the two-tone people face that much racism? I mean, maybe they did. I don't know. Adam, do you have any insight? They're like constantly thinking about how they're anti-racism, but was there that much racism in England in 1976, 1977?
I imagine that there was probably a ton. Yeah. But I can't. I definitely don't have any firsthand.
It sounds like they're fighting like racism like every night. I mean, maybe that was the case. I don't know. I know our English friend Rich was around punk rock at the time. So, Rich, I will ask you to write in and tell us, was the English music scene super racist in 1979? Like, was there skinheads showing up all the time? Nazi skinheads showing up like all the time. But anyway, so the Specials have this song called Racist Friend. And it's got the famous lyrics, "If you have a racist friend, now is the time for your friendship to end. Be it your sister, be it your brother, be it your cousin, your uncle, or your lover." And I gotta say, I always profoundly disagreed with with the Specials' lyrics. First of all, they're saying, if your friend's racist, you should be friend with them. And I always thought, well, maybe if your friend's racist, maybe you should try to tell your friend and convince your friend not to be racist, not just turn your back on them. Because if you just turn your back on your racist friend, he's going to go find other racist people, maybe make other people racist. But if you show that your friend that you shouldn't be racist, well, that's kind of better. But more importantly, they say, like, if your cousin or your brother or your sister is racist, you shouldn't be friends with that. And I think that's complete bullshit, and I think it's cowardly of the Specials to say so. I would never turn my back on any of my family members, even if they were racist. I would say, listen, it's your lame that you're racist. You shouldn't be racist. But I would never turn my back on a family member because they're racist. I mean, I think that's low. I don't know. I think that's.
You might need a kidney one day, right? So.
Well, that I'm just saying. I think and I think it's a persistent problem in the punk rock scene today. The concept of loyalty is very, very slim in the punk rock scene today, and so the fact that someone would even consider turning their back on their direct family relations because they're racist is like kind of lame if you ask me. You definitely should not condone racism, but it's still your family. I mean, no matter what your family does, it's still your family. You got to stick up for them, you know, unless they do something like really, really horrendous, you know, which
I think there's a line here. I mean, if they're just like, you know, just one of the, just what, you know, a racist, but and an asshole, not really like active about it, then like, I agree with you, John. But if I
that's not what the Specials are saying. The Specials are saying if your family member is racist, cut them out of your life. That's what the Specials are saying.
Well, I'm getting there in a minute. But like, and this is where I you'll see in a minute. If they're talking about like the lyrics, the friend part. If I walk into like a friend of mine's house and I see in a closet with the door open that they have a, you know, Grand Wizard's costume in there, I'm like, okay, dude, I'm leaving. Like, there's no, if you're actively like that, no, I'm just, there's just there, you're not getting any help from me. But if you're just like,
if my friend was the Grand Wizard of the KKK, yeah. I would still try to convince my friend that he should be the Grand Wizard of the KKK.
I think they're too far gone after that. I
don't think anybody's ever too far. Well, in that scenario, I don't think anybody's ever too far gone. I mean, like, it's a common story where like a guy of a neo-Nazi, like leader of a neo-Nazi sect becomes anti-racist and, you know, tries to make his former associates not be racist.
Right.
That's not
my responsibility or like my, is it worth my effort when they're that far gone?
I'm saying if it's your friend, maybe it is your responsibility. That's my argument.
Ricky, I would like to give you a counterexample. And his name is, Darth Vader.
Oh, okay.
He's yeah. racist?
So, well, probably. He was racist against the Jedi, right?
And he is a Jedi. He's a self-hated Jedi.
He was, but if you know, Luke didn't give up on him, and he had that deathbed confession there, turnaround. So,
and look what happened. Look what happened. Luke got his arm cut off.
No, but that's before he became not racist anymore.
Yeah. Sometimes, Ricky, in
you
this
know,
case,
I don't watch these movies all the time.
You've got Ricky. What we're saying is that if you learn that one of your friends is the Grand Dragon Poobah of the KKK or whatever the fuck you call them, then you have to let him cut your arm off. But eventually, before he dies, it'll be better.
And there's another line in the. In
I guess you showed me, Adam.
There's another line in the song, and it goes. It is a famous line. So if you are a racist, our friendship has got to end. And so that's fine. If he doesn't want to be friends with late racists, that's fine. I mean, I'm not a racist, but he's speaking to whoever, you know. But then he says, "And if your friends are racist, don't pretend to be my friend." So basically, Jerry Dammers is giving me an ultimatum, and he's saying, "If your friends don't fit the recommended boxes that they have to fit in order for you to be my friend, then you're not my friend." Well, let me tell you, Jerry Dammers, anytime anybody gives me an ultimatum, I'm probably going to decide against them. So,
what for him, what defines a racist, too? We can get all deep into that, too.
I'm saying instead of really – I'm accusing Jerry Dammers of saying instead of truly wanting to – rid or decrease racism, he's more interested in power tripping and setting himself above other people who may be racist or may be friends with racists. So for him, it's about giving himself a cool pat on the back rather than correcting a perceived evil. I don't really think he's that way, but I do think he takes too hard of a line in this song. Let's play. So I'm going to play Racist Friend, and you can decide for yourself the stance that Jerry Dammers takes. And of course, I'll tell you right now, I'm anti-racism, of course, but I'm saying I think you're better off trying to convert your racist friends than just turning your back on them. So I'm going to play your racist friends, Adam White by The Specials. Ricky Franco, what do you play?
I'd also like to say I'm anti-racist too. So I don't know if you guys remember, I guess it was a few weeks back now, we announced that we were doing mini Lightning reviews, and we started doing them, and I'm not sure exactly when they'll be up, but I assume soon. And you know, I was doing mine, and I found this really cool Canadian ska band called The Filthy Rascals. I think they're Canadian, pretty sure they are. They had a release out, I think last year, called Cloak and Stagger, and they're like this. They're kind of like crusty, but they also have a horn section too. And I found this just awesome song called Shitty Little Angels. So that's what I'll be playing from their album, Cloak and Dagger. Stagger. Stagger.
That is an incredibly hard title to say.
Yes.
Every time you said it, I kind of cringed because I don't want to have to say it because I can't speak half the time. And that seems like it would trip me up. So I keep talking about the Slackers on and off. So we're going to play something by the Slackers here. This is... I hope a little bit of a more rare recording, and I only say that because I can't find this on any of the digital services, and that really sucks because it's seriously one of my favorite records. So the Slackers have two at least live albums that they have put out. They put out one called Live at Ernesto's back when they were on Hellcat. They later, through a European label, released an album under the label The Slackers and Friends, and then it was called Upsetting Ernesto's. So they went back to this Ernesto's club in, I don't know where it is, Spain or something like that, and they played another live show. This is super special as a recording because it's not just The Slackers. It's The Slackers along with keyboard player Glenn Adams, who is one of the Upsetters, and also Susan Cadogan, who was a reggae singer from the 70s. All of them.
Do you know where Susan Cadogan lives now?
I don't know where.
She's a banker in Delaware.
Really?
Really.
She is fucking awesome on this record. So that's cool. So anyways, this whole live album is really good. I feel like it's a little bit hard to find. The band just had some with them when I saw them once, and I bought one, but I've never seen it in many places online digitally after that. So in any case, it's one of my favorite eras of the Slackers that are on here. It's back when they still had QMAX 420 in the band. And they – so this – what I'm going to play from it is I lost what the damn name of the track I was going to play. The track that I'm going to play is the first, it's actually the first song off of their Red Light album. They're doing it live here. So this is the song Cooking for Tommy, live off of the Slackers and Friends record. And of course, when they're talking about Tommy, they're talking about Tommy McCook. So here you go. The Slackers and Friends playing Cooking for Tommy live at Ernesto's. After those other two songs.
Thank you.
And we are back. Adam, like, that was a good pick. That was a really good pick. I got to dive some more into those Slackers and Friends CDs. I think there's like two or three of them. There's one where they play with Ari Up, which I want to hear, and some other cool stuff. I don't know, guys. Should we just close this out talking about the modern ska scene?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I think we can't do this without really talking about, you know, what is happening these days? Is modern ska, is it a movement? Is it a wave? Are we on the fourth or fifth or sixth wave at this point? What does it even mean to be one of these waves? So
I mean I can talk about at least what I've kind of witnessed in like the last like year or two. I'll get to the one band we were going to talk about in a minute, but you know, last year I went to this ska festival in downtown LA, and it was called like Ska Core Invasion, and I went because Leftover Crack was headlining it. And I think
Ricky, what were you wearing? I'm just curious. Were you wearing a pork pie hat and like a slim suit with a skinny black tie and checkered socks?
Not at all. I think I was just doing the t-shirt and jeans thing. I don't remember from like a year ago.
Did anyway. You skank?
I don't. I think I did. I might have. That's I don't know. Cool. Anyway,
Adam, what you're pro skanking, right?
John, we skanked at my wedding.
That's pretty nice. Cool.
Okay, so
I skanked like 3 or 4 weeks ago, actually.
Well, anyway,
when you skank, do you lean forward? What's your skanking method?
You lean forward with the arms going up,
elbows out to the side or to the front.
To the side. I think. Yeah. But anyway, I was at this. Ska Core Festival, and
I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you give your skanking skills?
I don't know, fucking 6.
That's pretty good.
I don't know. But what I'm getting to is, you know, I think it was like Viernes 13 and.
I mean, do you want to improve your skanking skills, or are you happy with the 6?
Do you have any other questions?
I'll go ahead, Ricky. I'm sorry.
Are you done?
Yeah. Go ahead.
But what I noticed was I was there super early before the headliners went on. And what I noticed was like there are a ton of Los Angeles Hispanic bands that combine ska and mariachi music.
Yeah, that's a whole scene now. Smell this records.
It's huge down here. And then at Punk Rock Bowling, also this band was opening for Leftover Crack. Club show, and this band called Los Carnales out of Texas were fucking phenomenal, and they kind of did that same thing. I think during them,
nice.
Not during Leftover Crack, but and Armando was at the same show, and he told me like about them. I was pretty blown away. And then also, I mean, I if we're talking modern ska, I think we should talk about the Interrupters a little bit, but I'll let you guys chime in on this. In a little bit. Oh, now.
So I'm answering this question differently now than I was earlier today, because my original answer was going to be there is no fourth wave of ska, because a wave to me implies that there's a popularity spike along with it. And I know a lot of people have made arguments that bands like, say, Bomb the Music Industry, or maybe even inside of what Kamen Rider was doing, constituted some sort of fourth wave, because it was, I think, maybe artistically a step forward from what was going on with the third wave bands. And I would agree with it from an artistic standpoint, but like, it's not a wave. Like to me, no one in the real world gives a shit about what Jeff Rosenstock is doing. And I love Jeff Rosenstock, but he plays to people within this scene.
Even within the past 2 or 3 years,
you think? Yes. My mom doesn't know what Jeff Rosenstock is doing, but my mom could probably identify you a couple Boston songs that were on the radio. It's not a wave, I guess, is what I'm going at. But I looked this up because I was hopping around online, and I'm like, what is the current ska thing? Because all my touch points are really 90s ones. And I popped onto like a ska subreddit, and I was looking around there, and they made, Ricky, the exact argument that you had just made, which was there totally is a fourth wave of ska, and it's stuff that's coming out of Latin America. And there's like a ton of like of Mexican kind of ska bands. There's a ton of like Spanish speaking bands that are huge ska bands that play to, you know, numbers of people that dwarf kind of what goes on in like the dumb little North American punk scene at times. And they have, you know, huge followings, and we're just totally not really aware of what's going on there. So that's what, so I'm willing to believe that huge amount of music exists, and I don't know about it.
There really is that festival I went to, and they're doing it again, I think, was really, really eye-opening. It was extremely hidden until I went there.
How interesting. Think of it this way, though. This is very interesting, Adam. This goes back to your original point. Ska goes from Jamaica. When ska was big in Jamaica, no North Americaner really knew about it. I mean, maybe some did, but almost nobody. Then it goes to England. When ska's in England, no one in Jamaica cares about ska anymore. They're all doing reggae by then, you know. Then it goes to the USA, third wave, you know. And then after third wave, it goes down to, you know, people of Latin descent down in L.A. and even in Mexico and stuff. And so now we don't know about it, but they do. So how fascinating in that it transfers from culture to culture, and in a way leaves the preceding culture out of its next movement.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of amazing. Like I like the idea that like
– the spirit of ska.
Yeah, well, I like the idea that this music didn't just like die with you know, pudgy white millennials, and it actually went somewhere else. That's great. It makes me totally like I want to go 10 years into the future and get the Space Trojan box set of modern Latin ska bands so I can figure out what's cool and what's good from this scene, because I don't know how else I'm going to get into it, but you know.
Oh man, I'm not going to name any names, but about a year and a half ago I went to a ska goes acoustic show, and it had like all the frontmen from a lot of the big ska bands playing acoustic on like a Tuesday night at some dive bar. It was rough, man. I actually left depressed, honestly. I left depressed. It was like they're playing like these happy songs, but they're like there's like nine people there, and you know, people aren't really into it, you know. It was rough, man. It was rough.
Yeah.
So
I just wanted to mention one band that I think is really keeping ska alive, regardless of how you feel about them.
I'm mentioning the Maytales.
No, I'm talking about the Interrupters. The one band that's really the most active on Hellcat right now.
I think it's the only band on Hellcat right now.
I reviewed their new album, Say It Out Loud, and I gotta tell you, it surprised me. I was very happy with it compared to their last release. It has really cool. It has some cool pop punk, some good ska. Finally, they made things. They really upped their game a lot more than they did the last time with their first release. And what's fascinating to me is, because I've seen this band at least three times now, and I mean their live show is great.
Do you usually skank there? Like when they're playing, you skank?
Not at their. I don't think at their shows.
Maybe you definitely should, Ricky. Skanking is a lot of fun, and it's good exercise.
I think the last time I saw them, I wanted to be in. I had a spot at the barricade in front because Rancid was headlining, and I wanted to be in front for Rancid. So I didn't skank.
You know, I interviewed Tim Armstrong once, and he said to me, he's like, you know, I'll give anyone. He's like, if the opening act is playing and I see someone really skanking away, I'll give them a bunch of signed records. That's what he told me.
So I mean, this is a band. That, and I've asked people this, like just fan, like huge fans of theirs. They are still huge fans, like their favorite bands still that are like Boss Tones, and all those that 90s ska that became fairly popular. And
do you think they genuinely love the music, or do you think they're using it as a way to flash back to a time in their youth?
No, these were people like maybe a little older than me, not much more though. And I gotta tell you, I've read about this too, you know, the record release show for this album of theirs, they played at the Roxy here in Hollywood, and that's a 500 person venue. They sold it out, and they sell it out every time.
That's pretty good.
I think there's something to say. I think ska is still there. It's just not, it's not as big as it's not as huge as it was in the 90s, I think.
Well, there you have it. We're Scott, Adam White, Two Tone Adam White. Any last words on Scott before we play our closing jams?
I would, I mean, if people are going to write us, because I think they should, I would love to know what I like me as a person that was once really into ska and then totally burnt out on it. Like what should I go get into at this point? And like, and to me, like it can't just be a bouncy third wave band anymore. Like, I mean, Ricky, like with all love and respect, like it can't be the Interrupters.
What?
Like I just, I've heard that
kind of thing. I missed part of what the first part of what you said.
No, I'm just saying that I need some new ska in my life, but it's got to be, it can't be something that was doing the kind of stuff that I was listening to in like 1998.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, and I'll be playing a song by them later. That's why I really like Star Fucking Hipsters. I mean, that for me, that's what kind of, they did a really, really good modern ska punk, I thought.
Yeah. So I'm curious what the punk news listening world, has to say about that. I mean, so on that spirit, I'm going to play a newer kind of ska act here. So let's jump into our final songs and we'll do those. So this is a guy from Toronto named Prince Perry. The song here is called, do I have it in front of me?
Love at the End of the Century.
Love at the End of the Century, because I'm not looking at the actual document. Yeah, so this is Prince Perry and the Gladstones playing Love at the End of the Century. Of course, this being the kind of small and incestuous Canadian music scene, all of Prince Perry's records, of which I was entirely unaware until earlier today, were produced by a guy named King Kongirio. And King Kongirio was the bassist in King Apparatus, and King Apparatus was one of those first bands that was on Stomp Records. So we're not falling too far from the tree. But apparently, according to the internets, this is one of Toronto's kind of top modern ska acts. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of early specials in this, but there's a lot of Elvis Costello in it too, and I think it's pretty cool. So this is a song called "Love at the End of the Century," followed by someone pick it up.
Ricky, what are you kicking?
I will be playing The Civilization Show by Star Fucking Hipsters from their album Rest in Peace. Never Rest in Peace, I'm sorry.
Co-starring another ska legend.
That's exactly why I was going to playing the song.
Good pick, Ricky, good pick.
It's Dick from Subhumans and Citizen Fish does co-vocals on this, so another ska band connection. So yeah, Civilization Show by Star Fucking Hipsters.
And then I'm going to close it out. We're going way back to the start. We're going to play one of my favorite old school ska tunes. This is going to be Congo War by Lord Brynner. Lord Brynner just passed away. No, Lord Tonomo passed away. Lord Brynner passed away a while ago. This is Congo War. I love it because it starts out as a classic ska song, but it's a very political song. And then wait until the end when he starts singing. And it's one of the most amazing endings to any ska song or any song I've ever heard. I don't want to overstate it, but it's cool. Listen, Two Tone Adam White, thanks for being on the Sky episode.
Hey, I have nowhere else to go.
Two Tone Ricky, thank you for being on the Sky episode and teaching us how to skank.
And thank you, John, for guiding us through this journey.
Indeed. And you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And so we're going to play... Perry and the Gladstones. We're going to play SFH, and then we're going to close it all out with Lord Brynner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
My mom's old man is calling nonstop, looking for love if he's ready or not. He's searching the book for company, a senior discount or maybe for free. The doorman's got it on VHS. What he's thinking is anyone's guess. He calls them up, look at the score. By the time they arrive, he forgets what it's for. We'll be right back.
accept responsibility. When we gonna make up and unite our possibilities? Change our selfish ways and share our great abilities. When we gonna grow up and accept responsibility?
Congo, Euaku.